How's it going, guys? Ladies, gentlemen.
Hello. We are Spiegel and Parkins from a show that is intelligently titled The Spiegel and Parkins Show on 670 The Score. And
I came up with it.
Yeah, right. And Danny hosted this thing last year in Kansas City.
That's true.
And I hosted this thing last year at the Metro. And I like how Pitch Talks is moving around to some of the coolest rock and roll venues in this town, because this is a great place. Anybody seen a rock show here before? It sounds really, really good here. So I can imagine the acoustics on your baseball conversation are going to be high-end.
Yes, which is
good. Oh, which is important.
It's really what matters for my baseball
I think so. John Greenberg sounds really good in this room.
I know. The acoustics, and that's the last music term that I will use
tonight. Well done. You're all good.
So we have a great panel, a couple of them, actually, that we'll be leading. But I think we need to get your story of the last time you were on stage with Cubsdom, when you pulled Theo Epstein out of a crowd of crowd surfing.
I happened to be the hand that was closest as he was crowd surfing on this side of the stage of the Paradise, and he frantically reached an arm out, and I helped grab it. That is true.
So he's a rock star and a baseball savant and Theo Epstein's lifeline.
But this was after the trophies went out. Like, I was there when the trophies went into the crowd, and my first thought was, what the fuck are those doing here?
And then he broke one.
I had nothing to do with it. But, like, there was a massive email exchange the next day, or the day after the story broke, and somebody said, oh, yeah, my buddy picked up four flags off the ground. But, you know, it's their trophy. They can do what they want with it, and that's what they did.
Yeah, when they got back in town after it, I talked to someone at the Cubs, and they're like, you think that was the first time the flags have broken off that trophy before? I'm like,
right?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought you guys protected the World Series trophy.
You know, yeah, it's not the Stanley Cup, I think. Is what we learned, although horrible things have been done to the Stanley Cup. It's awesome that we live in a two-team town, and I take such joy in the fact that there are many, many things to dissect across town and different ways to do it. There was a while there where the Kenny Williams methodology was extremely successful, and you had them going for it every year, and the Cubs mired in weird mediocrity, and obviously things shifted, and now Rick Hahn is doing what he's doing, but I think it's awesome that we get two teams to discuss, and we'll do that with everybody tonight.
Yeah, exactly. So let's pull the room real quick. By round of applause, Cubs fans in the room. Sox fans. It's about what I expected.
You know.
It's about what I expected.
Unsurprisingly, that's a smaller but louder group.
Yeah.
That's really unsurprising.
Right here.
Hey, stop texting the show, all
yeah.
right? Just
talk
stop.
More Sox.
I understand. I get it. We don't have a bias. We're not told what to say. Just, you know, just storm the field and attack a Kansas City first base coach next time you can. You know, too soon. Too soon. Apologies to the Tom Gamboa fans in the room. But no, that was awesome that they were smaller and louder. That was beautiful.
Yeah, no, and that's why we talk a little bit more Cubs. But let's get the panel out here.
Wow.
Right? I mean, come on, it's a business.
Well,
there will be plenty of Sox talk. Don't worry.
No, there will be, because it's interesting because I think we're all informed by watching the Cubs rebuild, and now we get a chance to watch the Sox do it their way, and it's an interesting time.
All right, so let's bring out the panel.
I like it.
We have the columnist from The Athletic, who will be conducting a Q&A a little bit later in the show, John Greenberg. Round of applause for John Greenberg. Look at him here.
John has covered every team in town. He knows where the bodies are buried, has good stories at commercial breaks.
With an old style, Cubs bias. Who else?
We have the Cubs beat writer for also The Athletic, Sahadev Sharma. Come on out, Sahadev. You know Sahadev from his work with Baseball Pro and other places in the past, and now he travels with the team. Look at him. He's big time.
We have she covers the White Sox, and she works for the Cubs. She got a Cubs World Series ring. It's all very confusing.
It is, because she's a White Sox lifer and writes White Sox for WLS and others, and yet she's wearing a Cubs World Series ring.
So we'll get to the bottom of her story. Kat Garcia is here.
And this is a borderline score colleague. I've heard her co-hosting on the station before, and she is now doing lots of human interest stories and others over at USA Today. Maggie Hendricks is here with us. Come on, Maggie. Boom, 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 boom. Hi. All right, everybody. Hello. Howdy. John, let me start with you since you've covered both sides of town. I've seen you in every locker room and every press box imaginable.
Sometimes you're in my gym locker room, which is kind of weird.
That's, you know.
That's creepy.
Don't pretend you didn't invite me. And so how do you think living through and watching the Cubs rebuild has informed your coverage, media coverage, of the White Sox rebuild and also informed the fans' experience as they watch Rick Hahn do it the way that he's embarked on doing it?
You hope Sox think. It's kind of funny because Theo's big thing was like rebuilding's not linear and all this stuff, but it kind of was linear if you really look at it.
It ended up being a very direct 5 years.
If you really look at how it went down, it was linear. So I think in some ways the Sox fans are thinking of that. Like, I would imagine a lot of Sox fans have that four-year. We say five, but it was really four because, you know, by the fourth year they were in the NLCS. Mm-hmm. So I think people kind of want to see that. And I think some Sox fans want to see it even a little quicker because – Rick Hahn had a leg up because of the draft they had last year, which is before they, you know, traded Sale and Eaton.
Right.
They didn't dump players during the season except for what's the reliever they traded last year? Zach Duke. They traded Zach Duke for Charlie Tilson, but hasn't worked out as well as we thought. But the Sox do they have a definite leg up than the Cubs did in 2012 for sure because they have way more talent in that organization. So I think it did help sell it to the Sox. I don't know if the Sox ever really needed it. Fans needed it sold as much as common wisdom, right?
They were ready. They were ready.
Like this wisdom going around that was never actually proven was that Sox fans won't deal with a rebuild, even though they weren't coming to the actual product anyway, you know, once the World Series buzz died down. So Sox fans are ready, and they're better fans than they get credit for in the, you know, in the bulk of the Chicago media. And I think people here know that.
Do you agree with that, covering the White Sox, Kat, as a Sox lifer? Has the Cubs informed this rebuild in any way?
I think being a White Sox lifer gives me a little bit of a sort of cynical outlook on the situation. However, I am very satisfied with the way Rick Hahn has handled this rebuild. Unfortunately, I mean, it was hard to see Chris Sale and Adam Eaton go, but the return that the White Sox got for them is really incredible, and we've already seen some great things from those players in the minors. Right now there's almost as much focus on the minor league team as there is on the major league team. I know CSN picked up some nights games, mm-hmm. things like that. So I think that Sox fans do have a lot to look forward to and reason to.
I think the Sox organization has done a nice job of trying to zoom out and widen the focus and realizing that's what people want as you're doing this kind of thing. Help me with something, and this isn't really for anybody, but I've now accepted it because it's what they're doing, but I don't get how accepting a draft pick that may end up in the middle of the first round is okay as you're embarking on this. I just think, you know, the opportunity to get top five and get somebody, maybe they still will, but I feared that they weren't bad enough, and I kind of still feel that they weren't bad enough. I've accepted that Rick is not as concerned with that, but are you okay with the fact that they might be a 500 team here along the way as opposed to one of the worst 3-4 teams in baseball?
I think it's interesting, that's for sure. I mean, we know the American League Central is a pretty weak division, but to see them succeeding the way they are has been interesting, but for the reasons that you said, it can be a little discouraging when it comes to looking towards the future. But it's never a bad thing to see development at the professional level.
Well, here's the thing, though. They've been drafting at the top by accident.
Correct.
So it's not like they've been, you know, they're drafted 19 in the past few years. they did it not on purpose. They've been drafting those guys that the Cubs got. And they went pitching, you know. They
right.
went pitching a lot
went
of ways.
Rodon and Fulmer.
Right, whereas the Cubs, which I think was the, you know, not a hidden genius, but a genius of the rebuild, was getting Bryant and Schwarber, two guys that were going to be ready, you know. They were ready, or I'd say Schwarber was ready maybe a little earlier, but Bryant they knew he was ready right away. And they just wanted to give him that year.
And it's dangerous territory for any team, no matter what sport we're talking about, to say, oh, no, we're going to be really bad this year to try to get
Is that Gar Paxson over there?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the Bulls are the perfect example of that, of, you know, you have to pretend that you're trying at the very least. It's wow. dangerous territory to just say we're going to suck for luck like happened in the NFL.
They're going to – I mean, there's still a second half to play out, more than a second half. They're playing
bad.
In the American League. They're going to start trading guys. They're not going to be 500. I'd be shocked if they're close to 500. They're going to fall.
They'll be a top 10.
The American League is so much. If this was Cincinnati we're talking about or Milwaukee, okay, but the American League is a lot better than the National League. They're going to get beat
up. Other people are going to sell too, though. Yeah, that they're going to be. It's going to be one of those things where they're competing for other.
Yeah, with the Cincinnati's and Milwaukee's.
Right. Yeah, but we talked about that exact thing with Jeff Passan today from Yahoo, actually, about how.
On 670, the score.
From 9 to 1. No, really. Tell your friends.
Stop, John. Stop.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but we have an app.
It's implied. It's certainly implied. But
follow me on Twitter at Danny Parkins.
Yeah, wow.
I'm shameless, buddy.
I'm aware. The thing is, like, Yu Darvish might be available, right? Marco Estrada might be available. Toronto could use Marcus Stroman to get you towards Marco Estrada. Johnny Cueto might end up available. This is, you know, what is the possible harm of Rickon waiting on Jose Quintana? This is the possible harm, at least for a year, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, and the possible harm is that he doesn't pitch well, too. I mean, or gets hurt. I don't think he'd go down in value. But remember, Samardzija had a career year. That was the best. That was timing wise. Could you have a better timing than Samardzija's career year then?
They got so lucky in so many ways. Absolutely did.
Yeah, and if you talk to those guys. I mean, I'll talk to Scott today and ask him. I don't know if he'll give me the same answer that Theo and Jed will give you about being that lucky, but you know, but they will. They'll tell you, and you've talked to them. They know how fortunate they were, and they know the White Sox. The White Sox are. Their Eaton deal is a no-brainer, right? I mean, even though Giolito was getting offered around to everyone because they knew he was messed.
Even if he wasn't in the deal and you got Lopez
and Dunning. And Yoan Moncada, Kopech, there's a little risk. But I asked Han about that because I'm like, what are you – in spring training, I'm like, you know, there is some risk with some of getting all these pitchers. And he's like, well, we'll take the risk. You know, we're going to take risks and we're just going to be redundant and get more pitchers and we'll take the risk.
The cynicism around it blows my mind. And I mean, it's well earned, and we talk about it with a lot of teams. The Bulls have already been mentioned, the Bears, but it's like, do we really think a team is going to trade Chris Sale and Adam Eaton and then pause the rebuild? Like, it just doesn't make any cognitive sense whatsoever. Like, they're not going to, oh, wow, we started 500 in our first 30 games.
Well, that was the conspiracy theory.
Right, the conspiracy theory.
They just traded the two troublemakers. These guys texted it every day.
Trade the jerks and the jersey
cut. Show. Stop. Or sign your name or put your number there or something.
Unless we have a major league thing happening, you know? Maybe the players are pissed off and there's, you know, some sort of crazy naked woman cutout in the clubhouse. We don't know.
We can only hope.
There is not.
There's not.
Thank you for that confirmation.
That's great insight, actually. But you
said, the woman.
Yeah. But you said it's tough to sell and, like, suck for luck. I feel like it's easier to do that than ever. Because I think fans are smarter than ever. And if you have a good communicator of the message, and Rick Renteria is not that, but Rick Hahn is.
Uncle Ricky, please.
Yeah, but Rick Hahn is. Like, if Rick Hahn, when he gets out there and he says, we are going to rebuild, Jerry is on board, Kenny is on board, we are in this for the long haul so that we can have a decade of success, and you have the Cubs right across town that did it, what White Sox fan wouldn't be on board if that message is communicated directly?
I think that they'll be on board. I think they'll buy it. But they also don't think they're going to come. Like, because the difference is between Wrigley Field and what are we calling it now? Guaranteed rate. That's it. Fly the arrow.
Some guy wants to call
fly
it
the arrow. But I mean, the difference is nobody's as much as I love the churros, nobody's coming just to go to the game. Like, nobody's going to come hold on. And they do have good – honestly, the game experience for the White Sox is way better.
But they didn't come the last 5 years anyway.
Okay, good point.
So this is like, you know, you're kind of knowing that's where it's going. Yeah. I'm wondering what – this is something that we deal with every day, and I'm sure some of you do as well. And I think, Sahadev, you might be the guy to ask about this. Covering the natural ups and downs of a baseball season where – You don't need to inflame passions as people get upset or get excited. And I, for one, think it's their right, and they ought to, you know, ride that roller coaster because that's kind of what you're in it for. The mix of that with trying to offer, like, a little calm perspective on it. And maybe this is more how you interact on social media, but even as you're covering a story, you want to try and talk to the players and talk to the coaches and try to get answers. But, you know, so how do you balance that and trying to feed the reader what they might want or need and yet be calm with your perspective?
Well, I think I'm naturally optimistic. So I usually, unless there's a big reason to panic, I usually tend towards, okay, I'm trying to find out why something isn't going right and find a rational explanation for it, while most of the fans in my mentions aren't necessarily the most rational people. So I understand that. Years ago I would try and debate with them, and it was not very fruitful. So I've avoided that. I try and just avoid hot button names. Last year there was a certain point where I just wouldn't tweet about Jason Hayward. Just avoid that name.
That was definitely
write an article
one, yes.
about him, tweet that out, and never say his name during a game. Hey, Jason Hayward struck that ball well. No, don't do that. Do not tweet that out. You know, there are certain things. You know, Kyle Schwarber is a hot-button topic right now. You know, I'm adamant that he'll turn it around, but you have to give reasons why. You can't just say that. You have to talk to him and see how confident he is and that he's not worried about it, that he has let off and, you know, previous levels before. He's done this before. He's been through struggles before. He's one of those hard workers that doesn't get mentally, you know, he doesn't get in his own head and start to struggle at the plate because of the head games going on. It's all physical right now, and those are the type of things that can be fixed. So that's what I try and put out in anything. That's what I try and draw to the player or the coach or whatever, try and get explanations why something isn't going well. If they don't have the explanation, I try and mix their their poor explanation with numbers to back it up, and sometimes it doesn't always end well, so, you know, can't always look for the positive.
Speaking of talking to people, Maggie, you had breakfast with Kyle Schwarber?
I did.
I imagine him eating like 15 pancakes.
There weren't pancakes there, but there was an omelet station, and he got a hell of an omelet.
Supreme.
Say.
Yeah, how about a pound of raw bacon?
there was a ton of it. The funny thing about it is it was a media breakfast type of thing that was, you know, by the, I think it was Sheridan was sponsoring it. And I don't think Kyle knew that media were going to be there. And I heard him say to his agent, yeah, I should have read the email.
That's a great feeling on your way into the interview.
Yeah.
Well, so he can read. That's
yeah.
Good.
Well, so he gets emails. Just if he reads them is a different story. And it was a cool thing because he was, like, talking about his high school football coach who, during his injury, like, during last year as he was struggling so much with this injury, his high school football coach kept checking in on him, but not asking him about baseball, which he was kind of appreciative of. Like he didn't want to talk about baseball because he was pissed that he couldn't play. So it was a cool thing, but also kind of hilarious because you could see him just keep eyeing the buffet.
Sure, we'll get to your guys' question in just a minute. But actually, on the idea of access, we're all in the media, different levels of it. But I feel like baseball. It's kind of like the last pure, like, it's not pure, it's the wrong word for it, but there can actually be access journalism done.
Like a press pass is a press pass,
right.
No matter what level.
Because the NFL, there's basically no exclusive time, no star players talk to you. If they do, it's in a press conference setting. There's very little individual reporting that can be done by most on the NFL. The Bulls are so guarded historically, but you guys get so much access before a game, after a game with the manager. So he does 500 media appearances a year. Players before, on the field, clubhouse open, before the game, after the game. Can, you know, we start with John. Your day-to-day of covering baseball and your access and the cultivating of sources, you cover all of the sports. Would you agree with the assessment that, like, baseball gives you the best platform for insight?
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. I mean, I was actually talking about it with Vic Fangio because he was there before a Cubs game, and I was kind of explaining it to him. But
it's
Vic, but because Bears are so different, you know, you have an open locker room in the Bears, but during the Lovey years, none of those guys ever showed up, you know, like, and they were kind of the best players were never in the locker room to talk, and if they did, they were kind of rude. Some of them were that would show up. So yeah, and the Cubs are a pretty good team. I mean, the guys are there, they're nice. Like Chris Bryant doesn't blow you off; he talks to anyone. But, you know, there is, like, sometimes it's tough to get starting pitchers because they have their routines, right? But if you do get, like, John Lester, he will sit and talk with you. You know, I'm not there every day, so guys don't know. Some guys know me by face, maybe, but they're not like, hey, it's John Greenberg. Let's catch up. But it's a way better. I mean, you can get Theo and Jed, if you're in the mix, pretty easy. They'll talk before games. Whereas like Ryan Pace talks like twice a year, but Ryan Pace does talk to the beat writers through like emails and text. You just don't know it. Whereas Theo and Jed are there. Like they're showing their face, they're facing cameras, they're facing questions, not just from the beat writers they know who aren't gonna screw them, but from like anyone that's there. So baseball is by far, like I said, I cover all of them. Bulls used to be good and they're bad now. Blackhawks can be okay, but they make guys sit at their locker. Blackhawks is actually kind of interesting because guys sit at, you've been there, they're actually sitting at their locker waiting for you, whereas baseball, you have to kind of grab them.
Well, baseball, it's always just, there's a little level of awkwardness. You have to kind of learn the ways and either, right? You either talk to people and figure it out or you just,
it is awkward because you're going up to them when they're like on their phones.
Of course. I remember trying to talk to Nomar Garcia-Pero when he's in a towel and they're like, am I supposed to do this right now or not?
It is.
Imagine how we feel.
But
honestly, like that is also part of it.
Sure.
I had it more of this with the Bears, but like that thing of like, well, he's in a towel, but I have to ask him this question.
And there's no structured specific time.
No, some guys like talking just as soon as they get there. Some guys don't.
Yeah.
Some guys are fine shirtless. Some guys aren't.
Yeah.
You really have to figure it out.
Yeah. It's a process. I always ask, I'm like, you want me to wait till you get dressed? Yeah. Do you want to talk right now? Do you have time to talk?
Huh.
You have to ask all those things.
Honest communication. That's interesting.
And then you see them on their cell phone, and you're like, just playing a video game. And then you walk up, and you're like, hey, oh, he's FaceTiming with his kids and wife who he probably hasn't seen, and I'm interrupting that. I'm a jerk now. He's never going to talk to me again. So there's all these little things like that. Especially, it's always the cell phone. They're always on their cell phone, and you don't know, is that some BS I'm checking Instagram, or is that a real I'm in a fight with my fiance?
Right.
Text. Damn millennials.
I remember the first time I got a print. Right. I hate
always
you all.
Always on our phones.
Attention span of a goldfish. The first time I ever got a press pass was at Fenway Park, and I'm in college, and I go, and it's Red Sox Tigers, and I'm behind the plate, and Mickey Tettleton and Rob Deere and Jack Clark are hitting bombs, and I'm just blown away, you know?
Speaking of name droppers.
And I asked Jack, well, but... these are older players, Danny. And, and I asked Jack Clark, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And there's that moment of like, should I talk to somebody during BP? And he's like, sure. I'm like, so that was pretty cool. Like, you guys there and talking. And Jack Clark looks at me and goes, are we fucking doing this or what? Okay, lesson learned. Cut to the chase, you know?
I think it's all about the air of confidence also. I mean, it was my first time in the White Sox clubhouse, in any clubhouse last week, and you have to act like you've been there for a while. And, you know, I've been around ball players for a while. If we want to talk about name dropping, I could drop some names. But so it's I don't have that aspect of it where I'm starstruck or anything like that. The fan aspect kind of went away for me a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the ability to be able to confidently say, hey, do you have a second? Or not being awkward about approaching someone who's in a towel or on their phone.
No, you're right. It's like I wouldn't say machismo. I just say confidence. There's like an arrogance to everybody.
Exactly. You don't
want to
act
timid.
Yeah. Peggy Kuczynski once gave me the advice. And speaking of name dropping, she's the greatest woman in the whole wide world. But Peggy Kuczynski told me if they sense fear in you, then they're going to prey on that. And I was like, okay. I was scared to death, but I still had to just put it away.
Anyone have a good story of like an F-bomb being dropped in the locker room?
Like, I mean, stories. I'm trying to think I first started, I was nervous. It was like I used to freelance for the MLB.com and the AP, so I was never, I was meeting guys, right? So you have to for MLB, you had to do these huge notebooks. So you had to like get all this original stuff. So I always used to do the visitors. I'm always trying to meet these guys. I remember Todd Helton once was pretty rude. He was like reading a letter from someone. He's like, this person's trying to tell me like how to get better. I'm reading that, and I was like, haha. He's like, no, get out. Like, Joey Eishin once told me to leave the visitors' clubhouse.
Oh, that's
standing there.
Billy Butler once told me to not be a fucking dumbass.
Yeah.
Did it work?
Mike Piazza.
I'm here.
Mike Piazza once gave me the, yeah, I'll talk at this time, this exact moment. And that was when the clubhouse closed.
Nice.
So you got me this time, Piazza.
Yeah. Oh, man. Billy Butler.
Yeah.
Anyone have any questions? You got a question?
You, sir. And this is Kevin Kennedy, organizes Pitch Talks. He's a delightful man. He's walking around with a handheld, so raise your hand, we'll find you.
Kevin, please avoid my sister.
Your sister?
There we go. So pursuant to the question, I guess this is for the whole panel, about access as a baseball writer versus other sports, how has social media changed the way that you do your job on a daily basis?
So for me, because I write a lot for the Win on USA Today, which is a definitely like socially pushed site, it's a huge part of it. And it's also a huge part of getting to know players. So like I follow all the players' wives. So I see pictures of the kids. I know what's going on. Honestly, like follow their wives. Albert Elmora's wife, Crystal, follow her because it's the cutest kid in the world, but whatever. Because to me, it's not just about like a player being like, oh, my ankle is sore, because they're never going to say that. But if you say you find out from a wife what is going on, or you just kind of get to know them on a different level.
Well, that's really wise for you because you're supposed to be more populist yeah. with the stuff that you write.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I think it would also be valuable to all of you, and I know you guys all do this too, because then sometimes you know what the mood is. Sometimes you know that, oh, wait a second, did their wife go back home to Miami or to Las Vegas? What the hell's going on there? You know, so it also gives you a little bit of an idea on that.
I don't follow wives.
Did you follow Kristen Cavallari, or was that Lauren's job solely?
I think I do Kristen now. Lauren and I have a running Kristen joke, though, but I don't follow, like, ball. You know, like, she's a celebrity.
Yeah.
I'm a Laguna Beach fan. I'm old school.
Sure, fair.
And obviously she's impacted Jay's life in terms of what he wants for the future.
Yeah, right. 100%.
That's quite something. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the change that happened. I mean, I think that change happened with maturation, but this isn't Cutler talk.
You wouldn't get pitched well, a lot naked picks either. Naked Jay Cutler.
It's not snap talks.
A lot of people assume that social media has been part of the downfall of our business and society or whatever. But in some ways, I think it's helped because I've had a number of occasions where the person that you are talking about, either positively or negatively, then all of a sudden shows up in your mentions. And so I think that there's actually that amount of accountability there. And it's like they're not listening to the show, which you all should be, between 9 and 1 on the score. But like the athletes themselves are not listening, and if they see their name get retweeted and then someone, you know, snitches on you on Twitter and like links them in their handle and then they show up. Like there's an accountability and a professionalism that I think is.
Did that happen more in Kansas City than it does here?
Well, I mean, I'm so not new to Chicago, but I've only been here 4 months. So, you know what I mean? In terms of professionally, it definitely has happened more to me in Kansas City.
I don't feel like it happens a ton.
Oh, no,
I think it does.
I think to Danny's point.
Do you think athletes come at guys?
Maybe it's more for us, but people will say, why don't you at this person once you just said that?
Adam Sheehan. Okay.
But maybe they'll come at you. Maybe the player will come at you because you guys don't cover the team, per se. You're not there every day.
Perhaps, but I always.
So they won't come at me because I'm there every day, and then they'll come to my face.
Right. Well, because what we are is not close to you, but I always think of when Jay Mariotti used to write columns and never show up. And the players got
but that's
so.
That's the thing. You got to show up.
You got to show
right?
up.
If you're going to write that column, show up the next day.
Exactly.
I once started a long conversation with John Lester talking about his Twitter last year. When he does this positive thing, and it's kind of funny every morning. And we started that way, and then we started talking for half an hour. We ended up talking about like Bobby Valentine's year with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So that was actually a good icebreaker.
Lester's one of those really entertaining personalities that doesn't let it out unless you know how to access it.
Right.
Right.
He's really great one-on-one. He'll just sit there.
So
you get him in the right moment. He'll talk. It's almost to the point where, whoa, I just wanted to words, man.
Now or I'm, sitting next to Lack.
Now it's
get him sitting next to
Lack. Well, last year after a playoff game, I think it was the DS, and he was going on with a bunch of us, and then I stayed and stuck it out. We were talking about really random stuff, and Lackey, he's drinking beer, and Lackey's just like, man, you got to be quiet. He goes, I don't want to stop talking, John. How about that?
Well, see, that's the stuff that I love. That, like, you know, Lackey took care of Lester when he signed that giant money deal in Boston, and Lester was still being paid like a rook and beyond. And now that Lester has this giant money deal, he's taking care of Lackey. And, like, that stuff, when we get access to those kind of interpersonal facts, that's the stuff that's gold to share, don't
right.
you think?
There's absolutely moments where you have something that you don't necessarily want to write a whole piece about.
Right.
Just small little snippets that you want the public to know, or little stories like that that give the fan base somewhat more of an interpersonal connection with the player that you're able to give them.
Right. That's the true gift of access.
Right. Absolutely. That's how we have such strong personalities in baseball right now, such as John Lackey, John Lester, you know, Rougned Odor, players such as that, because we know that side of them now. We have that ability to share that with the public.
But I think you also have then, sometimes you find those little nuggets of where what a player has in common with all of us. So like Chris Bryant saying, oh, I really like the 100 and Grey's Anatomy. You know, like little things like that, you get to, I know, I still watch Grey's Anatomy and it's just basically me and Chris still watching it. But that's one of the nice things on social media too, because sometimes you'll see them react to a television show or to something and you see these things that's like, oh, right, they're baseball players, but oh, they're human beings too.
Anyone else with a question? Oh, the Sox fan, of course.
Loud, angry, volatile texting Sox fans.
More Chicago anti-Sox bias.
Sorry.
I'll just yell. I'm loud enough.
Yeah, you are.
I'm wondering, anyone who does have access to the Sox clubhouse, just has there been any noticeable change in vibe, chemistry, whatever, between the Ricky Renteria to Robin Ventura era? They seem like, you know, a team with a weight off their shoulders, even though they're not playing for anything. I wonder if anyone's seen that firsthand.
Well, like I said, I've only been in the clubhouse once so far. I plan on being there quite a bit more. So I wasn't there for Robin, but obviously you can tell the sort of atmosphere that he brought. People didn't have a lot of confidence in him. Ricky definitely brings more of a positive atmosphere to that clubhouse, and I think he's really good with the young guys, which obviously there's going to be a lot of them coming up, and there are a lot of them now. So I think I can't necessarily speak that I've seen the difference, but I believe that there definitely is one with Renteria.
When we were talking earlier about the arrogance of a clubhouse, I was thinking of the first time I saw Azagian walking through a clubhouse, where just the cock of the walk and just looking to kind of intimidate anybody that's there. And then 5 years of straight-up milk toast with Robin. It was palpable, and it did have an effect to me when I was in there.
Ozzy was like no one else, because managers don't walk through a clubhouse and talk to guys usually. You don't even see managers in the clubhouse usually.
Right, it's like the player's space.
Right, but Ozzy was not the player's stage.
Ozzy wanted eye contact with every single person.
Ozzy wasn't a player.
Yeah. Ozzy would come sit and talk. He would sit in guys' chairs and make fun of them. like to their face. He would do impressions of guys. Which you don't see managers do.
And when they reacted and they
some guys liked him and some guys didn't.
But a lot of organizations will go players, manager, disciplinarian, whatever. They went so far the opposite direction with Robin, and then it lasted so long. I've only been around the Renteria White Sox one time, and I did notice a loose, happy vibe, but it was pregame after a win. When we had him on, it was an interesting thing.
Yeah, interesting would be a nice way of putting it. Everyone who I've talked to about him says that he has, like, you know, player-first mindset, and he's done all of these things where, you know, he's got guys talking about their families who are actors and wrestling and player-led presentations and all of these icebreakers and all this stuff that, like, kind of sounds like some of this quirky stuff that Joe Maddon does, honestly. And then you ask him about it, even though it's been reported on and players have been quoted on it and he has been quoted on it. He's like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to keep that in-house. And so, like, that air of secrecy, he's very militant's the wrong word, almost more NFL style of, like, we are going to close off the wall to, like, how we want to go in there, but that's not how the baseball culture is. And so, like, players have said, yeah, it's great. Rick Renteria is, like, he's got mandatory team meetings, and we're doing all these icebreakers, but then he himself won't really share it.
Well, you know, what's funny is we were making a big deal at Sox Fest. We did this ceviche cook-off. Like, it's so random to do. And
it's
I asked Saladino.
Queso Fundido recipe.
Right. And Saladino was a judge, and I asked him about it. And he's like, yeah, he actually brought it in last year. Like, when he was a coach, he cooked for us and, like, brought ceviche in. So, I mean, he was already, he's that bat, you know, he's that ball of energy guy. And I know people at the Cubs said they wanted him to show his personality more. You know, with the White Sox, they felt like he didn't do it enough with the Cubs. He was too worried. So, I hopefully he, as they get better, opens up a little.
And that's, I mean, I think that's an underrated aspect of a manager. I always say there's three things a manager does. On the field, obviously in game. And then there's in the clubhouse managing all those personalities. And then dealing with us. Because we're the ones that send the message to all of you. So if he's not a good quote, if he's not in post-game presser giving off one-liners like Joe Maddon. Yeah, is Joe Maddon perfect manager? Hardly. No, but He's great with the media. He knows what to say in certain moments. Certain guys will, you know, it'll rub guys the wrong way because it seems like excuse making. But he always has a fun, interesting spin on things, and you can get a note out of it. You can put a soundbite out of it. I covered Ricky Renteria for a year, and it was hard getting a good quality quote.
But I think he's better as a personal manager and an atmosphere provider.
Yeah, sure, no doubt about that.
I've always talked about it as an atmosphere provider. You know, like Ron Washington was a great atmosphere provider and a brutal X's and O's guy.
He was a great quote, too.
He was a great quote, too.
He was one of those guys like Ozzy where it would be 10 minutes, you interview him, and then turn off the mics and then talk to him for another 20 minutes, and he starts F-bombing. And it was amazing. It was the greatest experience of my life.
So Ricky seems to be good at the atmosphere providing, at least so far in this second stint, but the public stuff, not so much just yet.
That's not his thing. That's
not
fine.
His forte.
Do we have time for another question before the Q&A with John? Anyone else got a question?
Right there.
Back right.
Hey, one thing we don't hear a lot about as fans is we see 25 guys on a team and we think they're all best friends and they just go to pizza parties together or whatever, but what do the cliques actually break out as? I know that there's a language break in most clubhouses. It seems like Rizzo and Brian are friends. It seems like Lackey and Lester are friends, but or is there guy cab in, cab out? You know, like what does it break down as in either side of town?
It's a good question.
Sod, if you can do it.
The reality is that the Cubs are really good about, you know, mixing and matching. In Boston, I saw Lackey, Arrieta, Miggy, and Carl Edwards Jr. out together. You know,
that's a random group.
That's a pretty random group, right? And, you know, Chris Bryant doesn't go out a ton just because he's not a partier or anything like that. But you see pictures. Hey, that's why you follow them on Instagram, the wives on Instagram, because they're the ones that post those dinner pictures. But yet, it's always random. The guy that I see kind of as a floater on the Cubs is Justin Grimm. He hangs out with everyone.
But he's never sure who he's hanging out with at the moment.
He's
always a little confused.
Yeah. What's up, dude? Yeah.
What's funny is that we did a meet and greet in Vegas with the Cubs, and several players were invited. And Grimm is the one who said yes and came and hung out with everybody and shook
Grimm
his
hand. Down.
You know what? He's down for the hang.
It's like free Mr. Chow. You're going to pay me. Open bar.
I am in. I'll take a picture.
A couple years ago, I saw Hendrix and Brian out with their girlfriends or then girlfriends. It's like, that is the least rowdy table of major leaguers you will ever
four
see
waters.
In your life.
It's all the women talking. Those guys were not talking at all. But honestly, that is one of the things I like about the Cubs is that you see them like all hanging around in random different groups. But you also see, like, sorry to throw this out there, but you see a lack of toxic masculinity with them. They hug each other.
That's a good
Anthony
point.
Rizzo is talking about how they emotional he is. But, I mean,
you're
honestly,
right.
They're, like, very healthy about all of that.
Did you think the groin bump was a little much?
The groin bump made me a touch uncomfortable, but, you know, hey, if it worked for them. But, like, honestly, like, that is one of the things I love about the Cubs is that – and here's the thing, guys. I need to throw this out there. I'm a fourth-generation Cubs fan. I can't even try to be unbiased about it. Sorry. But, like, that is one of the things I really truly appreciate about them is that they're just a bunch of goofballs a lot of the times hanging out, and that makes them more likable.
Well, and that starts from the top. And then, I mean, Ross – I'll never forget the moment that backstage at Hot Stove Cool Music a couple years ago, Ross's first year.
Oh, were you playing there?
No, anyway. But I'm standing with Len Casper, and David Ross walks by, and Ross sees Len and goes, David Ross goes, Len, what's up, man? Oh my God, it's great to see you all. You're the best, man. Is this awesome? All right, I'll see you later, okay? And he walks by.
That's cocaine.
And no.
That's what you're talking about.
Sure,
it's
Ross.
It's just Ross. Because Casper turns to me and says, every day.
That's every, definitely true about
every
Ross.
Every fucking day.
Okay, I have like to, can so, I tell one really quick David Ross story?
Yeah.
So I interviewed him, I don't know when it was. It was a few months ago. It was during spring training. And I let it slip at the very end that I'm a fourth generation Cubs fan. And he goes, oh, so your dad was a Cubs fan, or is a Cubs fan. I said, yeah, he is. He goes, well, we need to take a picture so you can send it to your dad. oh, my gosh. Yeah. Which was, and then as he was walking away, he goes, hey, tell your dad I said hello. I mean, I almost started crying right there because it was just, like, it's my dad, you know. Like, so sweet.
He's just trying to get good coverage.
Yeah, I think it speaks to everything Sahadev and John have said and Maggie about the Cubs clubhouse. But I think a lot of that is attributed to Joe Maddon and the way that he's brought that group together, whether it be different ages, different cultures, different backgrounds. When Addison Russell first came up, David Ross was hanging out with him, kind of showing him the ropes. Yes, Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo are very close. And I can say that Justin Grimm is a very nice guy. I think with the White Sox, we will see a little bit more of that leadership role come from Renteria with the positivity he brings to the clubhouse. I'm not necessarily sure that Ventura had that in him to kind of bring such a diverse clubhouse together. But I think we will see that throughout the season and as the young guys start to come up.
One more quick thing on the Cubs clubhouse. You make fun of Theo all the time for his feng shui and sort of high-minded.
That stuff works.
Well, because tell people how that locker room is set up. Oh, you know, we made fun of Mark Trestman for trying to do this with the Bears and mix people
like
up.
Was it 90 feet? Is it 90 feet every way? How is it?
I think it's 60 feet, 6 inches.
It's 60 feet, 6 inches. Yeah, but he mapped out the way the lockers were going to be. Only a couple people got preference, but otherwise he's trying to put different groups together and mix up those cliques like you're talking about.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I think the cliques get mixed. I mean, people hang out with who they want to hang out with. You know, that's
the ability.
I mean, the big name's got the end lockers.
Right, but
he's
a hippie in that sense, though. He's a chemistry hippie.
No, 100%. That's like, and I'll talk to Scott about that. That's the biggest, like, misnomer about him. And I've seen quotes, like, I saw Jed's mom quote in a book about that. Like, these guys aren't, like, nerds. They're not math guys. They're relationship guys, and they're problem solvers. And that's, you know, and to see it kind of happen and evolve is pretty amazing because people really – for the Cubs, we're just on like, well, we know who Theo Epstein is. We know he's smart. He'll get this done. And it worked. And it worked in ways that no one thought was going to work. Like, you couldn't have mapped out how they did it. And the same with the White Sox. I hope there's a lot of White Sox surprises that we have no clue of how it's going to happen.
All right. Well, so that concludes our first panel. Let's give a round of applause to Sahadev Sharma, Maggie Hendricks, Kat Garcia.
But not John Greenberg. Don't give him a round of applause.
Well, no, because hold your applause for John Greenberg. He's leading this next thing.
We're going to be back later on with a really cool panel, including Harry Pavlidis and Rob Arthur and Craig Edwards and Jim Callis, who's here. Looking forward to all of those guys. So we'll be back with those guys a little bit later on. But, John, you're next.
We'll be on in like 10 minutes, I think.
Yeah. All right.
A little break?
Yeah, a little break.
Rest yourself. Then a round of applause for John Greenberg, too.
All right, I guess.
We'll see you in 10 minutes. There's a bar out front.